This is the Global Podcast Network, where executives and professionals connect, share, and inspire. Stay tuned for the conversations that drive success.
And welcome back. Appreciate you being here. We're going to talk about something today that you've heard the word before, but it's often not explained deeply, many times ignored, unless it's certain situations, but apparently affects all of us. We're talking today about hormones. What are they? Why are they impactful? Why do they have to be on our radar? She's going to tell us. She's a holistic health practitioner. She has a master's certified in nutrition, response testing, and so much more. And she's a wealth of information. Claire Boydeau is back with us. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Learned a lot last time we got together. And this is one of those topics, not that I know anything, but this one I know the very least about. And usually the word hormones is heard, at least in my world, when it refers to a woman, maybe menopause, hormone replacement, things like that. But let's go back to the basics. Hormones. What are they? Why are they important?
All right. So the basic summary about hormones. First of all, everyone has them. From babies all the way up to seniors. Some people are in process of using more of them than others, but everyone uses these chemical messengers in order to help the body go through and trigger, regulate emotions, process sugars, etc. So we've heard about a lot of hormonal things when it comes to the bridging that happens for women when they go towards menopause and the brain fog and all the other quote-unquote side effects that are happening. But really, hormones are really critical messengers that help us with our day-to-day. And so let's just think about this as a grand picture here. Because really the struggle is in the liver when people don't have the right hormonal balance. And let me explain. So the liver has over 2,000 functions. You know, Western might say 500. Eastern says 2,000. I'm rolling with 2,000 because I see a lot. The body prioritizes how it wants to function. So just think in percentages, priority. Top priority is digestion. We're eating. We're fueling the body. So the liver is really integral for creating the bile that breaks down our fats and our proteins. All right, so that gallbladder is used as a storage vessel in order to continue to properly supply bile to our stomach pouch. The next tier, think about like the second quarter of the priority of the body, is with a lot of like cholesterol regulation, sugar regulation, things of that nature. And then not only those, but also hormonal processing and regulation. Now, here's where it gets interesting and tricky. Because if the liver is not processing the hormones that have been used, so you've got these little hormone balls, they plug into the receptors and they give the body a message to, you know, regulate or surge, whatever, the insulin levels or regulate the different hormones. Now, if that's not happening efficiently, not being processed and dumped into the liver, well, the liver keeps trying to get that done. And so the struggle that people have then, if it's still stuck trying to process hormones in the liver then doesn't get to lower priority things like detox.
This is way deeper than I ever thought. How important they are.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome. So for me, because my profession focuses on treating the root cause of things. And most people are just toxed out. Most people are not absorbing the nutrients like they need to. I make sure one of the fundamental things I focus on is getting the liver doing all the functions that it can and should. So if it's getting stuck at a step, like processing hormones, when I need to be also detoxing, well, then I need to make sure to support that area of the body. Got it? So my end goal really is properly detoxing the body and utilizing the liver for all its wonderful 2,000 functions and not just getting half.
How do we effectively know if we're in a good situation in terms of our hormones? Like, you know, testing, what do you ask for? What can be derived from tests?
Well, so what will happen is that typical lab tests will have a prescribed range that people should have for the levels depending on what age and life that they are at. So that's a parameter to look at. But also understand, like, the lower range, typically people are not functioning as optimally as they should. So that means if the body has one more thing it has to handle, then it's probably not going to do that function as well either. So the way it shows up is the typical things. Well, they have what's called angry liver. They don't regulate mood very well. That is why Chinese medicine refers to the liver as like the mood gauge. So for that cranky teenager, that's when it really starts showing up, when the prepubescent kicks in and they're having to utilize and process more hormones because they're growing, right? Not only in height, but also in maturing their sex organs. They're processing a lot more. And so, yeah, the liver gets mad. It's like, I wasn't ready for all that. That's like a symptom. But for me, like, the main one that shows up is that people don't detox well. But the testing that I do is focused on figuring all those details out. For like the menopausal woman, it's all, you know, if we're just doing lab tests, again, people are in the low range or not in range of what is typically recorded or recommended. So what will be happen and recommended even for teens these days, preteens, is to get on birth control to raise those levels up.
Hmm.
So the girls will have irregular cycles and periods and all that because the hormones are not processing as well as they could. If you're older and heading toward menopausal state, then it shows up with all the typical, we've heard of these symptoms, you know, the hot flashes and the brain fog and the being tired, all those. Again, because the body can't get to that point of processing the hormones, yeah, we got symptoms.
What should somebody do if they're questioning their level of hormones? Is it go to their primary care doctor and ask for a test? Can you support with that? What should they do?
Yeah. So let's just say they've already gotten the feedback that their hormones are not optimal. If someone comes to see a practitioner like myself, what I actually do is help to support the area that is producing the hormones. And it's the same process for everything. Typically, something stocks out, you clean it out, and then you make sure to get nutrients. Now, one of the secret powerful nutrients for livers, flaxseed.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So someone can start implementing adding to their diet flaxseed or flaxseed oil. Other liver nutrients, this is where the cod liver oil comes in, vitamin A. So you start eating liver-rich foods. And then to help increase the actual capacity, because usually something is sluggish, you might want to drink a lovely dandelion tea to help clean things out, or something with a little bit of milk thistle. Start incorporating those kind of things, because at least those herbs do a general clean scrub wash out of the liver in particular.
So I always wonder how much you need to have to make a difference. These things like flaxseed, it first of all, I think it tastes pretty good. It's got mm-hmm. protein, which you don't normally find in things like that. It's got omega-3 mm-hmm. acids.
Yep.
Am I saying acids? Compounds?
Oil. Fatty acids.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good for you. I mean, it
really is.
But how much do you need to really start making a difference within your liver?
Well, so if you're doing smoothies and things, it's easy to add like a teaspoon.
Sure.
But if you're sprinkling on top of it, somewhere between a quarter to a half, it's fine. So that's at least going to raise, because if you think about like how big a capsule is that you get of supplements, and just fill that capsule in your head with the flax seeds, like that's not a huge amount.
Right.
So maybe a couple capsules, which is, you know, a quarter to half.
And in your opinion, how long, Claire, would you have to continue taking that? Or initially, excuse me, to make a difference? You know, I'm starting today with flaxseed. I'm gonna throw it into a smoothie. Maybe once a day, maybe I'll put it in something else. How long do you think it would take that or any of the other things that you suggest for the liver to really start maybe seeing the benefits or knowing that it's making a difference within benefiting your liver?
If that's the only thing you're doing, it's going to take a couple of healing waves. So that really translates to somewhere between 3 to 6 months to really be like, oh, I'm consistently seeing shift or difference in my mood, consistently seeing that I have less hot flashes, whatever your symptoms are, that you noted were connected to the hormones. And the reason being is that really people are 4 or 5 generations deep into, I would say, tattooed livers, meaning that they've had things passed on through the family line. And so that's a deeper type of toxicity. So that takes a little bit more time to get out. So if that's the only thing you're doing, is adding some milk thistle or dandelion tea to your routine and then increasing flax seeds and eating other liver friendly foods, yeah, about that amount of time. On a protocol, typically I work through that type of thing within 1 to 3 months.
What's actually going on? Is it detoxing your liver? Is it cleansing it?
Yes. So the milk thistle and the dandelion are detoxing it. Then the flaxseed oil is helping to provide nutrients to help it repair faster.
It's amazing when we just talk about these seemingly little things and how it can make such a difference.
It is. So I feel like by and large, we don't have really good approaches or thought processes for keeping our bodies cleaned out. So we think like biblically, that is why they introduced and had a habit with fasting. Because just simply not eating as much volume of food then allowed your body to focus on other things instead of digestion, such as detox. It was simple. You just had more of a liquid diet for 1, 2, whatever was needed, days. Your body would be like, oh, I got some space. And it would go in and help optimize, clean out things, and then you would be back up and going. So it was just a simple, helpful practice. But now, we don't really have that as much. So things catch up to us.
Fasting. You mentioned it. We have never really talked a lot about it. Hearing more and more, I'm considering it. Even a simple fast where you have dinner, let's say 6 p.m., and you don't eat until the next day, until at least 9, 10, 11. Your thoughts on all of that?
I'm a big proponent of intermittent fasting. Just because we need more time to detox. So if we have a concentrated window where we're eating, then that just allows us to be in a good rhythm and allows us to be more efficient with our detox. Now, when people are seeing me, I customize the start and when you break your fast. Because, of course, I'm optimizing the diet, you know, making sure whatever you're eating is not inflaming you, all the things. But really the principle behind the intermittent fasting and starting later in the day is because the body has a cyclic, I would say, pattern, time frame for doing repairs. So between 5 to 7 in the morning, it's working on repairing the large bowel. Between 7 to 9 is working on the stomach. 9 to 11 is working on the spleen. It's working on the same type of things every time of the day. So by starting a little bit later, and I'm saying drink fluids, but not actually have like something where you chew the food until 10, 11, that gives the body time to start the digestive processes and get the circulation going without distraction. And then it makes it easier for your body to do digestion.
It almost appears that your body needs time to work on itself. But here comes more food, and your body, I'm being facetious here, but the body's like, no, wait, I'm busy over here. Now, now I got to work on what you just fed me. Yeah.
It will divert its priority, because priority number one is digestion. So if it's like, I was supposed to be working on a detox, would you eat some food? Especially if it's like heavy, thick fats and proteins. Yeah. It's going to be like, well, can't do that. So I'm going to focus on the digestion.
How many hours would you say can make a difference in terms of fasting? Are we talking about 15 more? How often?
I would say 12 to 15.
Okay. And that's easy. So, I mean, when you think about it, if you're getting roughly 7 to 8 hours sleep, you just knocked off, all right, that amount of time. You're not going to go to bed right after you eat dinner. So that's kind of easy when you think about it.
It really kind of is. So, yeah, if you just do 10 to 10.
Wow. And scale of 1 to 10, how important would you say it would be to fast?
Well, so there's different types of fasts for me. The hardcore fast is just nothing. The second step up is like water only. Then where I kind of land, especially these days, because most people just can't go hardcore, is some kind of liquid, be it broth, be it a thin smoothie of some sort, for 1 to 3 days. So it just depends on where people are as far as like what patterns I recommend. But after we're done working together, people can do the regular ones and they are fine.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, we've heard about fasting. I believe there's, just like hormones, many of us don't understand how much of a difference it can make in our lives. So we kind of put it to the side, but it just, there's more and more proof. You're even bringing it up today in terms of how important fasting is. I mean, you know, like if body needs time to recharge, regroup, you know, regenerate, all of that.
Clean up. Yeah, exactly. And so we have such a fascinating world these days. We have so many more things that we're trying to clear out, right? We just need more time.
You know, that's a really great point you bring up there. Never even thought of it that way. If we went back 100 something years, whatever that time would be, we're eating less processed foods. Your body, I would assume, can clean things out a lot easier. Now, with everything that we're ingesting now, our bodies must be almost freaking out. Like, what's going on here? Yeah.
Exactly. We are moving or incorporating things that are more toxic than what our bodies are ready to handle. And now it's like three generations in, because, like, for example, in the 1920s, they thought it was like so cool to do x-rays of your foot. So we started passing on radiation pieces in our body several generations ago. And it just keeps getting better, because we go for a look-see at the office for the doctor's exams, and people are just being radiated left and right.
Well,
and now we add on our processed foods, it gets, you know, accumulates.
Even to your point, recently there was a report that one CAT scan can increase your risk of cancer. This is in the last 2 weeks that came out. So,
especially these days.
Absolutely would agree. Our bodies are under attack, stress from what we're doing to
it. I would have to say that, you know, the cancer word is the big C. It is not actually a super scary thing. It isn't. So a cancer or a cyst, cancer tumor or a cyst, is just the body's way of encapsulating a situation is not ready or not able to deal with. And a cyst typically is just a ball of unresolved infection with a shell around it. A tumor is a combination of an unresolved infection or infections with a little bit of toxic waste in it. So that allows a tumor to really grow fast, because it's got the Bahamas environment for the infection inside. But honestly, there's just simple things that people can incorporate into your daily intake that helps keep that stuff at bay. And since it's locked all 1,000% of the time, including an infection, then yes, that's how fasting helps. That's, we're doing simple things like drinking apple cider vinegar and or pinches of baking soda and water. There's very simple things that can be done to help minimize the body's inclination to want to make these little encapsulations. So, yeah.
Talking about cancer, in your experience studying all of this, holistic healing, what percentage, if we go from 0 to 100, what percentage would you say that cancer is because of our environment, what we're doing to ourselves with everything that we're talking about here, food, all of that, as opposed to, well, just cancer, just, you know, it just happened. Maybe it was genetic, whatever that reason might be. The fact that we're doing it to ourselves, maybe unknowingly, on a scale from 0 to 100, what percentage would you, in your opinion, what you would put that out?
Well, there's two factors for me. One is what you're doing with your life to overwhelm your body. And then one, what is your baseline? What did you get from your parents? So that's the epigenetic ancestral piece. So it's starting to be, where your baseline just already puts you at a position to be more inclined to have something cancerous, just because each generation has more and more accumulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then our current environment also accelerates things too. So I would say most people have an inclination, unless you just lived in the mountains with a Sherpa or in Siberia or Greenland, you know, somewhere that's just very low incidence of things going on. Okay, most people have that kind of baseline.
So,
I'm just trying to think, like, what do I feel for percentages of people to have the opportunity to develop these cyst and tumors? Yeah, I would say most people. Some kind of cyst or tumor. Something. But it doesn't have to take you out. That's what I have to say. And especially if it doesn't get poked on, meaning that, you know, when you biopsy things, that actually opens it. So you're actually letting things out that was encapsulated. So then the body's like, I had that kind of like handled in this little ball. Now you just broke it open. Am I supposed to do something with that? I couldn't do it before. You see how that goes?
Oh, yeah, I do. And I've often wondered about that. And quite honestly, experienced it myself with for skin cancer in the last 6 months, and as soon as something was biopsied, it looked like it sped up its growth. And I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just spilling out the goods that the body couldn't handle. So then it's like, what?
Yeah. The body was doing its thing. Unfortunately, a tumor, and it needs to be addressed, but it's trying to attack it and take care of it. Now we put a needle in it. Now air got into it. And
you exploded it a little bit. And the body's like, I already couldn't get rid of all of it. Now I got to catch this stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's like now we have another invader, an intruder taking action. Let me grow more. Let's attack.
Well, it can't handle it now. It just can't suppress and corral the situation nearly as fast.
Fascinating. Yeah. It's just wonderful looking at a holistic way to heal. It really is. And it's like what is old is new again, because this is what people were doing many, many years ago.
All of our lives, really. I feel like it's really been in just the past 300 years where we've had this just one way approach. I mean, you can even just say past 150, but our early 1900s, right? But, politics, I would have to say, really kind of rules the day.
Well, money, you know. We could do 10 podcasts on big pharma and its impact, and we'll just leave it at that. You offer so many different aspects of holistic healing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it starts with a consult, a phone call, for somebody to better understand how you can support them. How do they find you?
Well, you can find me several ways. I would say I'm not super social, even though I am on social media. I'm not the person that's on there all the time. I'm more involved with the day-to-day face-to-face. However, if you go to the website, www.gnosis, like the word diagnosis, just without the D-I-A, gnosisnaturalhealth.com, you can schedule a 10-minute free consultation. We will chat about the situation that you're trying to address. I will give you feedback on whether this is in my wheelhouse, which this work will help everyone trying to heal or get better. It's just what modalities you will also need to incorporate. Like if I'm the only one, or you need to do other things, you know, chiropractic, whatever, PT, what have you.
Sure.
And then from there, you can decide to do an initial assessment. It takes about an hour. And I will figure out the timeline of how long you will need my protocols. And we go from there.
Excellent. You don't need to take meds. Nothing wrong with that. There's a place for it. But
I'm telling you, I'm all for a crutch. If a med is a crutch and it's helpful and it's not sending you back, I'm all for it. It's just, do you always have to do that? Most people get to a point where they don't need them.
Right. And usually the meds are treating symptoms, but not the root cause. And that's what you get to.
I'll tell you a secret, though.
Sure, go.
The older the design of the medication, the more likely it actually helps the situation. The newer design of the medication will always just support the symptom.
Interesting, because there are, I never knew that. So now I'm going to take that and process that today, that there's been some meds that have been around for 30, 40 years, and we still take them.
50 years. Yep.
Right. Could be.
Like aspirin.
Okay. Fair enough. Or some types of antibiotics that, you know, but wow. How interesting. Got to think about that one.
And they will also be more expensive. So the more effective it is with actually correcting the problem, it's also very, very pricey.
Wow. You have your finger on the pulse of all of this. It's fantastic. And I appreciate it. Thanks for being here today.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
We'll catch up next time. We'll be right back.
Okay. Have a great rest of your day.
Podcast Network, where executives and professionals connect, share, and inspire. Stay tuned for the conversations that drive success.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers.
Day-to-day simple tasks can become pretty daunting.
I have to carry my chair up 2 flights of steps or have somebody do it for me.
What scares me the most is just the falling.
When I'm struggling with my house, I think, you know, to have that one great barrier just knocked down, I mean, it's crucial.
Home for Our Troops is a wonderful nonprofit that builds a mortgage-free, fully adaptive, handicap-accessible house. And there's no catch.
It'll be our very first home that we've ever owned.
This is a game changer.
This is where your life begins again.
We need you to join us in completing this important mission. Please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Because of you, everything's going to be okay.